Chapter 15. Self-Starter. "Where are they?" Zach Nefane said from the scorched door, which he had propped back up against the shell of the inn. Behind him, Jarlaxle and Arathis Hune sat with the four drow prisoners, all bound with the magical cord that was Jarlaxle's belt. They were gagged, too, except for one, the man Zach Nefane had laid low with the butt of his sword. That fireball had to have been seen by everyone in the region, this level and those above and below, Zach Nefane pressed. "Sure," said Arathis Hune. "So where are they?"
"Who?"
"Onlookers."
"Hiding, and wisely so."
"From the city guard?"
"Oh, they are coming," Arathis Hune assured him. "From above, no doubt, and shortly, and in overwhelming numbers. Nothing like a fireball to rouse the defenders of a city built with webbing."
"And we are leaving," Jarlaxle said, standing up. He looked to that one drow who seemed conscious enough to comprehend. "We're not going to kill you," he said, eliciting a surprised and doubting expression from the man. "Though I'm not certain that two of your friends will survive anyway." From the door, Zach Nefane looked on curiously. Jarlaxle was leaving witnesses. True, these drow had initiated the fight, but that was certainly not the story they would tell to Ched Nassad's matron mother and ruling council. "I wish you well," Jarlaxle went on. "And if House Zavir falls and you become houseless rogues, as seems likely, remember the name of Bregan D'Airth."
"And if my house survives, should I remember that name, rogue?"
the prisoner asked rather impudently.
"Oh, do," said Jarlaxle. "And remember that three of us defeated six of you and a host of bugbears besides, and that on an occasion when you attacked us unprovoked and with a favor of surprise. So please do forever remember how badly you were beaten by less than half of your number. And remember, too, that Bregan D'Airth outnumbers House Zavir as surely as Menzo Berenzon outnumbers Ched Nassad."
With that, and with Arathis Hune in tow, the mercenary leader moved to the door, pushing it down and walking out of the burned-out inn.
"If they survive, that will be more for us to fight in House Zavir," Zach Nefane signaled to the pair.
"We will be long gone from this city before they are returned to their house," Jarlaxle replied.
"Where now?" Arathis Hune asked.
"House Zavir, of course, before the city guard descends upon the place, and before Matron Shiva realizes that we did not simply flee, and were not wounded or killed in the assault."
He pointed down three levels and across the chasm, to the right of a small waterfall.
"Are you ready for another fight?" he asked quietly.
"We had better be,"
Arathis Hune answered suddenly. Following his gaze, the other two saw why, as armored drow soldiers, some carrying the snake-headed whips of Lothian priestesses, swarmed down at them riding magical war spiders. The arachnids scrambled across a higher level, producing drag lines from their spinnerets to lower down to the next level.
"No fight," Jarlaxle assured them, and leading by example he ran away, his two companions in close pursuit.
They encountered few other drow, and it seemed clear that Arathis Hune had been correct, and those nearby were in hiding. The trio crossed a marketplace situated at a wider alcove in the chasm wall, but it too was nearly deserted, with one or two merchants peering out nervously from behind their carts.
"We need to split up," Jarlaxle said.
"There's only one way," Arathis Hune protested, "and only one ramp near to the next level, and one going up from here. Where would you like us to go?"
Zach Nefane, though, moved to the lip of the ledge, as if he meant to leap away. He ran along it instead, dragging his sword heavily, just a finger's breadth in from the drop, as if cutting into the webbing. Slowed by the drag, he was outdistanced by the other two, who turned back curiously.
"Go," he called to them, and pulling up abruptly, he brought his blade up high, only to slam it down hard against the edge of the web ramp.
"What is he doing?" Arathis Hune asked, but before Jarlaxle could answer, Zach Nefane reached down and grabbed the webbing he had cut with his sword, then leaped over, holding fast his makeshift cord. That line he had cut into the webbing tore under his weight, like a piece of cloth ripping, carrying him from sight.
"What?" a shocked Arathis Hune stuttered. "He..." "I told you as much about that one," a proud Jarlaxle replied, and on they ran.
Zach Nefane had estimated his cut very well, and he was quite relieved that his guess about the strength and integrity level of the webbing had proved accurate.
He swung down from the ledge in a controlled manner, the webbing tearing evenly as he moved lower, going right past the level below and, he hoped, to the floor of the one below that. He came up a bit short and so twisted to angle his drop to the roof of a building made of mushroom stalks and web cocoon, a large establishment that seemed to be another tavern or common room of some sort. Many eyes were upon him down here, though, Drow looking up curiously. As he let go of the web and fell free, he summoned a globe of darkness ahead of him, at his estimated landing place. He entered the darkness and hit the roof hard, fighting to maintain his balance. He had no room for error here, and held tight to the image of the landing area, and so moved within the darkness globe to the back edge of the roof, then flipped right over it, dropping between the structure and the chasm wall. There he found some good luck in the form of a back door, and he went in without hesitation, correctly guessing that those inside were quickly exiting to see what the fuss was about. Calmly moving through the small rooms and narrow corridors, Zacnaphane exited right behind many other dark elves, seeming to all who took notice to be just as surprised by the unexpected crash on the roof as the rest of the patrons. He melted away quickly among the crowd of drow milling about, then slipped through the marketplaces and around the buildings, moving fast to the nearest bridge that would bring him across the chasm. He looked back several times, hoping to catch sight of Jarlaxle, but saw nothing. He remembered the mercenary's words, though, and so he knew where to go. House Zovir would never be more vulnerable than it was at that very moment.
"Go down a level, and I'll get across the chasm," Jarlaxle called to Arathis Yun as the pair approached a ramp. The rogue nodded, or tried to, for at that same moment four stone sheets appeared in the air above him, hanging horizontally and moving with him for just a moment, before swinging down as if on an invisible hinge, thumping together around the surprised drow, forming a sarcophagus around him, magically closing the top and bottom. It stood only briefly, then fell over with a dull thud, and the muted groan of the surprised and suddenly battered rogue caught inside. Jarlaxle knew the spell. Only a very skilled high priestess could create such a prison in the air. They were in trouble. He saw soldiers coming up the ramp before him and knew he was out of options. He ran to the ledge and leaped away, planning to fall almost to the floor before breaking the plummet with a dwyamer of levitation. But he hadn't even passed the ledge when he knew he was caught, for there sat riders upon spiders, spiders turned away to face the chasm wall at the back of the ledge, spiders spitting web lines all around Jarlaxle. The mercenary grasped a wand reflexively to dispel the magical webs. He considered his portable hole, wondering how he might climb in and disappear. So many different options whirled in his thoughts about how he might find a new avenue of retreat, but in the end he didn't bother. He was caught, just as Arathis Yun was. He could only hope Zacnaphane was still free. Many eyes turned across the chasm to the smoldering ruins and the activity along the upper ledges. Zacnaphane was glad of that. Better to have wary drow looking there than noticing him as he hustled across the level, moving determinedly toward the house Jarlaxle had pointed out as Zovir. Using the waterfall as a guide, he ran true, coming before House Zovir in short order. He feared it wasn't short enough, though, because when he came inside of the place, he found house guards arguing with a contingent of armored soldiers, wizards, and many priestesses who had assembled out front. Zacnaphane heard one invoke the ruling council a couple of times and recognized that this gathering had come about in response to the assassination attempt. As in Menzo Baranzon, it was acceptable to murder someone in Ched Nassad, but it was not okay to be caught trying to murder someone. Zacnaphane slipped down an alley at the side of the house. The confrontation in front was right in the open, a negotiation more than a fight, as it would have to be since the force assembled to confront the relatively weak House Zovir appeared to be a massive alliance of the city's greatest houses. Confronted with such a challenge, the Zovir guards weren't watching for quiet infiltrations at that time. So over the wall went the weapon master, confident that he had correctly identified the guard posts in that area and had found a suitable spot equidistant to both. He slipped between hanging webs, around walls, and through shadows, finding a surprisingly easy route to a side wall of the house within the gate. In he went, moving silently along a tunnel going into the stone of the chasm wall. When he came to the end, to a door opening to his right into the house proper, he drew his weapons, expecting a fight. He tried to lay out a logical floor plan in his thoughts. How he wished that Jarlaxle had supplied one earlier, hoping that the houses in Chedna Sod were of similar interior design to those in Menzo Baranzon. He considered his steps to try to approximate his depth within the wall, then decided that the matron's throne room would likely be deeper still. Through the door he went into a large, empty sitting room. Not pausing to consider his good fortune, he was away immediately, moving deeper along the passageways. He passed a couple of occupied rooms, but again didn't pause, as he heard conversations within that did not seem like the chatter of a matron. Around one bend and down a low, tight side tunnel, he found a wider area, one that ended with ornate double doors sculpted with images of the Spider Queen, and knew at once that he had found the throne room. The door was likely warded, and heavily so. He had no way to defeat any such protections, so he chose speed as his ally. He burst through, diving into a roll, once and then again, as if flames and lightning were chasing him. He came to his feet unscathed, noting surprised guards at either side of the room, and a pair of young women, barely more than girls despite their priestly garb, gasping and falling back to either side of the raised dais in the center. Kneeling before an altar there was an adult priestess, her head bowed, her silver hair shining in the shimmering magical lights that danced in the webbing flanking the altar. He noted a pair of magical guardians, too, in the form of small jade spiders, and it surprised him that they had not animated against the threat, with the matron so readily exposed and so soon to be dispatched. "She is not here," the woman kneeling at the altar said without turning. Was she talking to him? The guards hadn't moved, the spiders hadn't rushed at him. The whole thing seemed somehow out of place. He stalked slowly to the kneeling woman, weapons drawn, and amazingly, she waved aside the younger girls and made no move to stop him. "Matron Zalvir is gone," she said, when Zaknafane's sword settled on the back of her neck. "She'll not be back."
"And who are you, then?" he asked. "Where is she?"
"Be gone," the priestess snapped, but not to him, and the younger women and the guards hustled out of the room. Slowly, the woman stood and turned to face the assassin. "I know why you are here, and do not disagree with your intended course," she said.
"Even if that course is to kill you?"
"You have no reason," she said with confidence. "I will ascend here in the absence of Matron Shiva, and on terms friendly to your employer. It has all been arranged, and I do not think your matron Mother Bayenri will be pleased if you put that blade to use."
"I am to trust the word of a high priestess?"
"I am Cyprina, daughter of Shiva, who will be matron Zalvir soon enough, assassin."
"I know who you are," Zaknafane replied, recognizing her from the meeting with Henri Nisadra. "You will be matron? For that alone I should kill you."
"Should you? The cost will be enormous to your mercenary companions, I assure you. And perhaps as well, you should consider that such an act will not be as easy as you seem to believe." He had, of course, considered the second part. No powerful priestess would be such an easy kill as this now appeared. In fact, it was that very apparent vulnerability that had given Zaknafane pause in the first place. Yes, he believed. This was the priestess who had squealed on Matron Shiva's mealy-mouthing about Bayenri to a Yoklil handmaiden. The conniving witch had condemned her own mother in her lust for power, hardly a new story among the drow, but still reprehensible in his mind. How Zaknafane hated her, hated them all, and he certainly still wanted to kill this one. He wanted to kill any priestess serving Lolth. But he understood his responsibility to Jarlaxle, and so he sheathed his weapons. "A wise choice," she said. Aerith Issyun leaned against the wall of the natural cave, his arms up above his head, shackled to the stone. Shackled magically, with no locks to pick and no way to get out short of cutting off his own hands. Oh, and no knife to be found. Even if he somehow managed to wriggle free, where was he to go? In the stone sarcophagus that had captured him, he had been carried to this dark place, somewhere within the chasm walls surrounding Chedna Sod, he supposed, but could not know. And then, unceremoniously dumped into a pit. There he had been tormented with stinging needles shot from hand crossbows, until he had stripped naked and handed all his gear up to his captors. They had dragged him to this place and left him here, enchained and with just enough magical light to keep him looking at the many dancing shadows, to keep him on edge.
Better to have complete darkness than this, he thought. Still, it could have been much worse. He had not felt the burning bite of any snake-headed whips, nor had any priestesses left magical symbols of pain or despair hanging in the air to devastate him in his solitude. He didn't dare hope that the matrons of Chednasad were less skilled in torture than those of Menzo Baranzon, though. And he had heard the word Dryder uttered more than a few times as his captors had departed. Was that his fate? To become an eight-legged abomination, half drow, half spider, and forever tormented? Aerith Issyun had to hope that time was on his side. Yet even as he considered that, he shook his head. If word got back to Menzo Baranzon and Matron Mother Bayenri, would she protect him? The rogue sighed at the thought, for he doubted that the mighty Bayenri would spend an ounce of treasure or political capital on the likes of him. Jarlaxle, maybe. He would probably walk free, of course, coming out of this somehow in a better situation than he had entered it, but not Aerith Issyun. The rogue tried to swallow his bitterness. Jarlaxle had saved him, he reminded himself many times. His minor house had been all but obliterated decades before, with only Arathis and a few others managing to escape. But surviving was not thriving, and the few remaining Hunes had then faced a miserable existence of bare sustenance along the ever-dangerous stench streets, where disease would find one if murder did not. A reprieve seemed at hand when the remnants of House Hune had joined with another minor house, Ozil. But there was no place in House Ozil Hune for Arathis, who had assassinated one of House Ozil's nobles years ago, which left him on the stench streets, and that's where Jarlaxle had found him 2 decades earlier. Found him and befriended him, and brought him and 3 others from his fallen house into this band of brothers he was somehow creating, remarkably, with the quiet blessing of the great matron Mother Bayenri. Their friendship had survived the decades. That in itself was a remarkable thing in Menzo Baranzon, Aerith Issyun knew, and the trust between the two had grown to the point that they had become like brothers, and not in the typical drow meaning of the relationship, with competition and jealousy and gain found at the end of a bloody dagger. But now the inevitable politics of Spider Queen treachery had wedged between them. And in this dark place, shackled helplessly to a wall, Aerith Issyun had to work very hard to hold hope that Jarlaxle's loyalty to him would climb some very tall barriers. If Jarlaxle was even still alive, let alone in any manner of control of this situation. The rogue sighed again, then rolled up acrobatically, turning his shoulders and bringing his feet right up over to plant against the wall. There he stood straight out, as far as the shackles would allow, then pressed off the wall with all his might, but to no avail. His wrists ached, the bottoms of his bare feet bled, but there was no yield in the magical bonds that held him. He rolled back down and rested, falling within himself, trying to find a place of emptiness where his fears and bitterness would not consume him. He became unaware of his surroundings, of the physical world around him, and so he didn't know how much time had passed. Was it 1 day or 3? When some stirring off in the darkness brought him from his forced reverie. He strained his eyes, catching movement, hoping for Jarlaxle, then recoiled physically and emotionally when he noted the approach of a trio of drow, 2 male guards and a priestess of some rank, judging from the ostentatious collar of the ornate robe climbing up behind her head. She walked right up to him and stared hard, then lifted her hand and waggled her fingers, chanting softly, while one of the guards moved up beside her and dropped a wrapped pack to the ground before him. Aerith Issyun braced himself, expecting some horrid magical pain to strike him, but instead, suddenly, his arms fell free, the magical shackles simply letting go. The priestess motioned to the bundle on the ground before him. Aerith Issyun eyed her suspiciously, glancing down at the pack and back to meet her gaze. "We are leaving," she stated sternly, motioning her chin toward the pack as she did, and making it clear from her tone that when she said we, she was including Aerith Issyun. Figuring he had nothing to lose, the rogue bent and pulled back the blankets wrapped about the items, his eyes widening as he realized that this was his gear, all of it including his weapons, including his vials of poison even. "By order of House Nisadra, you are no prisoner of Chednasad," the priestess explained. "Dress quickly and come along."
"Jarlaxle," Arathis-Hune muttered appreciatively, pulling on his clothes. They left the tunnels soon after, coming out onto one of the middle levels of Chednasad. They didn't ascend, though, to where Arathis-Hune knew the great house Nasadra to be, but rather went down, level by level, until they were on the floor of the chasm near the exit from the city. Were they going to set him free out into the open Underdark? But no. They led him instead to the wall just beyond the V-shaped chasm, and there one of the guards opened a secret door, cleverly designed to look like part of the natural stone. Through the narrow door and down an equally narrow tunnel, the priestess led Arathis-Hune while two male guards remained outside. Guided by glowing purple orbs, they reached a chamber, comfortably appointed with large pillows thrown all about the floor, and a rack holding many fancy bottles above a shelf of crystal goblets on one wall. Arathis-Hune was taking it all in, when the priestess grabbed him by the wrist and pulled his arm out wide. He watched her in disbelief as she cast a spell of healing, flooding him with warmth and removing all the pain inflicted by his shackling.
"I accept your apology," he said slyly.
The priestess chortled, a mixture of disgust and amusement, and walked away to pour herself a drink.
"Are we to make this our home?" Arathis-Hune teased. "The pillows seem quite soft."
"I will take you at my pleasure, or I will not, as I choose," said the priestess. "You have no say here, foolish outsider, and no power. Do not mistake my actions for anything more than my obedience to Matron Mother Nasadra."
"And to Lady Lolth, of course," Arathis-Hune said with a bow.
Before he came up from that bow, he heard the scraping of stone on stone at the back of the chamber, and looked over to see a portion of the wall sliding aside. In walked another priestess, magnificently adorned and of regal bearing. Arathis-Hune glanced over at his rescuer to see her bowing her head, eyes lowered deferentially, and he followed her lead. From that bowed position, he did dare to peek over at the new priestess to notice a second and more familiar person entering the room. Arathis-Hune stood up straight to greet Jarlaxle, but was caught off guard by the sight of the man. The little hair he had left had been greased and straightened upright, like a trio of small spikes protruding from the top of his head. Arathis had seen a similar, fuller set of hair spikes on Uthagentil Armgo, he recalled, and while Jarlaxle's were framed by skin reddened by fire, it was still a quite striking and quite handsome look for the mercenary. Always did Jarlaxle come out better off, even regarding his hair.
"I give you First Priestess Onre Nasadra," Jarlaxle said, "named for the Matron Mother. Onre the Second, I believe."
"Third," she corrected.
"Even more impressive," Jarlaxle said with a bow.
"I knew you'd come for me," Arathis remarked.
"I would take the credit if I could, of course," Jarlaxle replied. "But alas, I expect that I was quite recently in the same situation as you."
"House Nasadra was not aware of your arrests," Onre explained. "You and the House Zorvir assailants who attacked you were taken by the Red Guard, who answer only to the ruling council, and that's only when they deem it necessary."
"We would have been executed, I am told," said Jarlaxle, "killed in dark holes and left for the rats."
"I'm glad that you discovered us, then," Arathis-Hune said to Onre.
"Not by accident," Jarlaxle remarked, drawing a curious look from his associate. "Zaknafane," the mercenary leader explained. "He went straight to House Zorvir to finish our task, but he could not because Matron Shiva had fled the house and the city."
"Shiva is no longer to be titled as a matron," Onre corrected. "She is afflicted and beyond redemption."
"Afflicted?" Arathis-Hune echoed.
"Pes iziko fefe, nars isist,"
said the priestess who had brought Arathis-Hune to this place.
"The affliction of mirrors," Jarlaxle agreed with a nod, but Arathis-Hune wore a confused look.
"She fell in love with the image in the mirror," Jarlaxle explained. "All the world came to her through that narrow prism."
"That is why she thought she could challenge Beanri," Arathis-Hune reasoned.
"Matron Mother Beanri," the priestess beside him corrected, with a backhanded slap for his insolence. Jarlaxle just shrugged and nodded, then, almost as an afterthought, added,
"The affliction of mirrors is key to the power of Matron Mother Beanri. A great advantage."
You think her afflicted? Arathisune asked, stuttering through the words and wisely ducking aside when he realized that he had spoken them aloud.
Quite the opposite, Jarlaxle replied. Never is this insanity found in the first matron in the founding of a house, which Evenel the Eternal is, and rarely in the second generation of matrons, for, you see, it is not usually an affliction that attacks those who have earned their power. Only those who have such power given to them, and even then it is somewhat rare and is quickly corrected.
Corrected?
The mirrors will shatter, said Jarlaxle. Pride will take the afflicted too high, and so to a great fall.
You're quite fond of your reflection, Arathisune pointed out.
Who could blame me?
And now Shiva has climbed too high, Henri said, to peaks where she can only fall. But for the work of your companion, she might have survived longer, but now she will be removed.
Zacnaphane, Jarlaxle said.
Impressive for a new recruit, Arathisune admitted.
Not unexpected, Jarlaxle replied with a grin. But please, do not tell him that when he joins us. I would not have him thinking too highly of himself when we have such a dangerous hunt ahead of us.
Shiva?
You have unfinished business, Henri confirmed.
But first, I think we have earned a bit of respite and a celebration, Jarlaxle said, rubbing his hands together briskly and motioning at the bottles of fine liquor across the room.
I've earned it, at least, for saving your pitiful self, Henri agreed.
Then we will celebrate together, and I will try to serve you well, my lady, Jarlaxle promised, and bowed.
Hours later, Jarlaxle and Arathisune were relaxing in the secret chamber when the door to the chasm floor opened and Zacnaphane Doerden walked in, looking quite refreshed and relaxed.
You kept us waiting long enough, Jarlaxle greeted him sarcastically.
I was considering retiring to House Zorvir, the weapon master replied. The new matron is quite endearing.
She is still a priestess of Loth, Jarlaxle reminded him.
I didn't say I wouldn't kill her eventually.
Jarlaxle started to reply, but held his tongue, amazingly, and just nodded.
A new look?
Zacnaphane asked, staring at Jarlaxle's spiked hair.
Dashing, don't you think? I am rather fond of it.
By your own edicts, is it not in the best interest of an underground band to be inconspicuous and not stand out?
It is better for me that Bregendieff's soldiers do not stand out, indeed, Jarlaxle replied. But I have come now to learn something about my reputation preceding me, a reputation that will only grow when we bring back the head of of the former matron Zorvir. It is better for you, I expect, that I am recognized, that our targets take note, and so lose heart.
Zacnaphane and Arathisune exchanged doubting looks at that proclamation, but they just shrugged, neither really surprised by anything Jarlaxle might say or do.
East and south, beyond the giant mushroom grove, is where we should begin our search, I am told, Zacnaphane said.
You have narrowed it down to half a world, Arathisune remarked.
Zacnaphane shrugged. She is out of the city, into the open underdark by all accounts. Is there a better plan to be executed?
Jarlaxle moved over and handed Zacnaphane a glass of brandy.
Question, he said. How do you find a drow?
Taking the glass and a long swallow, Zacnaphane considered the puzzle for just a moment.
Answer, he replied. You don't. You let the drow find you.